From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to spend a good period of, or a good part of tonight's show talking about Drew Peterson and the arrest of Drew Peterson. And we're going to start with retired FBI agent, author. You'll see his most recent article on the arrest of Drew Peterson at Newsvine.com. You'll know him as Clint Van Zandt, popular guest on the program. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening.
Happy Mother's Day to you. We were talking off air. You and I have both been called mother many times.
Yeah, there's been a lot of words attached to that, mother and pig, and, you know, it's always amazing, you know, I'm sure for you on the street, me too, when someone would say that, I mean, it would almost be a laugh, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, when you arrest somebody, I never had anything against anyone, it's just, you know, that's the job, and that's what you do, and, you know, you and I learned over the years, you can't take those things personal, you just got to do it. So when someone would throw out, you know, either profanity or pig or something like that, it was almost funny after a while. But, you know, you didn't have a time to laugh because you were too busy watching their hands, watching their feet, and seeing how they could hurt you.
Yeah, exactly. Protecting your butt, that's for sure. You and I haven't talked for a while, but since we have talked last, our old friend Drew Peterson is... In the pokey, it doesn't surprise me at all that he's come up with all sorts of dumb things, like I should have returned the library books, how do you like my bling, and all this sort of stuff. Let's get into the arrest of Drew Peterson.
Yeah, you know, when you see that, you know, I know his attorney who, you know, his attorney rolls out, well, that's how Drew handles stress. And I think, you know, the reality is that's partially true.
Yep.
I think that really is how he handles stress. But it just screams, and it should for him too, it just screams of, don't you see how that's perceived, and don't you care? Don't you think people are looking at you with someone who as far as your second wife is concerned, you abused her and hit her, your third wife, or you're being arrested for as a suspect in a murder, the fourth wife, people believe you killed her. And then you're joking with the troops like this. No, you know, I don't. There's some in between hanging your head down and hiding, and you know, and putting a towel over the top of your head so your face can't be seen. But laughing and making jokes, that just that personality transfers to the offense itself. And you know, he's going to be tried eventually by a jury of 12, and I think he's got to consider, too, what's the public opinion going to be of him? So all that smoking and joking and laughing, whether he's guilty or innocent of the crime, you know, people judge you on the evidence, and they, in all sincerity, I think, in this country, they judge you on your personality, too. And if you come off too flippant, I think that could weigh against him.
Yeah, Drew Peterson, probably one of the most viled, reviled, hated suspects, now accused, that's out there. I've interviewed Drew. I've talked to Drew off the phone or off the air. And yeah, he comes across as a real jerk. And Clint Brodsky, who will... have on the show a little bit later, told me very early on, in fact, a couple of years ago when this all started, that it was a strategy of his to try and get this in the media as much as he can, kind of like OJ, and I think that may backfire on him. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's an interesting analogy. It was one I made in a recent article between Drew and OJ. It's that same type of narcissistic, sociopathic personality that people just don't like. And, you know, in O.J., it took over a decade to come around again. And Drew Peterson, it's taken 5 years. But, you know, you got to be – I think both Drew and his attorney have got to be careful things they say. Like the attorney the other day, I heard him suggest that maybe this was an old interview, but he had suggested that Drew had passed two polygraphs.
Yeah.
And he didn't. passed two polygraphs. He, on some of the questions on at least one of the polygraphs, he was inconclusive. And you know, I don't know, Dana, what your opinion is on polygraphs. I'm not a big believer on them.
No,
you know,
me neither.
I mean, I think polygraphs are it's something, you know, from a law enforcement prospect, it's something to we want to make people think the polygraph is omnipotent, that the polygrapher is too. But to me, the skill, the value of a polygraph is making people think, number one, it's going to be the finder of truth, and number two, having a good interviewer as a polygrapher who asks the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the United States, the only state I think a polygraph can be admitted in evidence is in New Mexico. Well, that says, you know, it's like many other things. It's like me as a profiler. You know, I mean, that's an art. That's not a science. And I think, really, there's an art to interviewing, and I think that's what the polygraph is. So for Peterson's attorney to roll out, well, he passed two polygraphs. Number one, he didn't. And number two, what does that mean? It's not admissible one way or the other. And I think Drew has got a personality. Realize this is a guy who did undercover drug investigations for a long time. He played a lot of different roles, and he's playing the role of his life right now. This guy thinks he's a rock star. Listen, you know, when a year ago or so, he went into the, you know, I do NBC a lot, and he went into the Today Show, the first time he did the Today Show, and he was just starstruck at, you know, they do makeup, and you know who was here yesterday. And, you know, when somebody gets starstruck like that, you start to question anything that comes out of their mind, if they want to see themselves associated in that same way. And I think this is going to come around and bite this guy in the butt.
I agree with you. And the polygraph part of it was for a book. And I can remember the night that I had the author Drew and Joel Brodsky on. And, yeah, there were some questions he passed, but some he didn't. But really, the polygraph is just an investigative aid. And I personally have been involved in a case where I obtained a confession from someone who was part of obtaining a confession from someone who passed a polygraph, but later admitted to an $135,000 theft. So, yeah, they're okay, but they're not everything, that's for sure. Let's get down to the investigation itself, Kathleen Savio case. What we've heard is only what we've seen in the media. So-called botched first autopsy, the so-called accidental drowning, coming to the door, Drew, and with some friends, and going up and finding her. All of a sudden, we've got Mike Bodden involved, and the Hollywood schmaltz is coming out a little bit in this. But you and I both know that Investigation 101, Clint, has to apply here, and there's got to be a case put together. Indictment is one thing, a conviction is another.
Sure. You know, for years, the old saying is you can indict a ham sandwich, and that's absolutely true. And, you know, was I glad to see that he was indicted? And, you know, yes, I was. I mean, you know, notwithstanding whether he committed the crime or not, you know, he's such a schmutz that the way he comes across deserves to be indicted and do some jail time just for that. But the reality is, just as you're suggesting, they're going to have to put a case together. You know, means, motive, opportunity is what they're going to have to come up with. You know, the motive is no heavy lifting. He was involved in a divorce with Kathleen. There was money. There was children. There was, you know, a lot of things. He had a lot to gain financially by her dying. And, you know, did he have the means to do it? Yes. Did he have the opportunity to do it? And it appears, once again, the answer is yes.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm hoping, my hope upon hope, is that this is just, you know, it's got to be something beyond, well, he looks like, he smells like, he tastes like, and therefore he must be the bad guy in this. And it's got to be something beyond, well, Kathleen had written letters to the DA and told her family, you know, this guy has threatened me. If I'm dead, be sure it's Drew. I mean, that's nice. There's a new law that says that can be admitted into evidence, even though it's hearsay. And I'm sure Drew's attorney is going to fight that tooth and nail. Maybe the ACLU will, too. But they're going to have to come up with some type of linking physical evidence beyond, you know, beyond his DNA or hairs or fibers, because, of course, he lived in that same house with her. They're going to have to, as far as I'm concerned, they're going to have to come up with cell phone records and things like that that put him at that house or in the vicinity of that house at that critical hour, and then they're going to have to come up with statements from him suggesting that he was someplace else other than there, so they can show that conflict to a jury. You know, just Kathleen saying, well, you know, he said he was going to kill me and do these terrible things, and the fact that she died, that still doesn't make this guy a murderer.
Right, and the case, there's never the perfect case, at least I haven't seen one in just about 27 years at this, but they'll put it together the best they can, circumstantially and otherwise. But Clint Van Zandt is here. When it comes right down to this, the aspect of how this has been played in the media beforehand, Clint, and how it is going to continue to be played in the media, right down to the jailhouse walk with Drew, and a good prosecutor is going to run all that stuff. How important will that be to this case, all this stuff that has gone on and on with every media outlet, including me and Drew Peterson?
Well, you know, first the challenge is seating a jury that has no bias in this case. But again, you know, they found a jury in the O.J. Simpson case, so hopefully they'll be able to come up with a jury here. But I think you're right, between, you know, the media show and you know, Drew suggesting himself that his life is like, you know, Drew TV. Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this guy thinks he's the sun and he thinks everybody else is the planet and the stars that circle around him. But there's an interesting aspect to that, and that by doing that, by playing that out, you know, he's going to make people like you and I and your listeners say, you know, even though I don't like the guy, even though I wouldn't go out to dinner with him, even though I wouldn't have a drink with him, if I'm going to be fair, I'm going to have to listen to the evidence. And, you know, there may be people who will say, you know, I dislike this guy so much that as a member of a jury, they're going to have to show me this overabundance amount of evidence. Otherwise, I can't convict him on just because I don't like him.
Right.
You know, that's repugnant to me. That goes against everything that the criminal justice system stands for. So, you know, I don't know whether he's, you know, whether he's crazy like a fox or not. And I think that's still yet to be played out.
Clint Van Zandt is here. And if you want to check out Clint's article on Drew Peterson, go to newsvine.com. When we get to this, and it's going to be a while yet,
sure.
There's going to be time limits involved. The Illinois State Police, almost running out of time as far as the indictment goes. Brodsky, and, you know, when he joins me a little bit later, of course, he's not going to play his hand here, but he's going to say this is nothing but vindictive. There's civil lawsuits. There's all this sort of stuff. Here we have a huge high-profile case that's going to gobble up the media, probably even more than the Anthony case, and others will suffer because of it. Is that going to be fair?
You know, somehow in this country, in America, in Canada, you know, we can still find a jury of peers, of our peers, that, you know, we come to the opinion that they can sit there and they can say, okay, you know, I know something about this case, but I'm willing to cast that off. I'm willing, you know, once you get that judge's charge that says anything you've heard outside of this courtroom doesn't count. The only thing that counts is, can they bring a case before you that shows proof beyond a reasonable doubt? That's a simple standard. And if the prosecution doesn't meet that standard, doesn't make any difference whether you like this guy or don't like him. But if you believe in the system, if you believe in our criminal justice system, you today have to take a stand and say either it meets that standard or it doesn't. And I think that there's going to be enough people to take that serious. They will bite their tongue.
Yep.
They will disregard this guy who offered himself his first prize in a win-a-date with Drew contest. And they'll say, you know, I will do my best to, you know, try to determine if this guy's guilty or not. Don't put me on that jury because I already know which way I'll vote. But I think there'll be people, you know, better than me who can sit on that jury and who can make the right decisions.
Clint Van Zandt's here, and I guess my last question, Clint, is, you know, after a while, and he even played that on my show, the dumb routine. I'm a funny guy. I didn't do it, but I'm a funny guy. But after a while, it became an insult to victims. It became an insult to the system. Radio stations with the Win a Date with Drew and the reality shows and all this sort of stuff. It became a real black eye as far as the media goes, because they kept relying on this guy because people wanted to hear from him. They were putting him up on a pedestal where he should have been under the rock. And was it something where the media failed terribly by letting him keep speaking, myself included, or is that just something that's inevitable anyway?
Well, I think it's going to happen in a high-profile case like this. You know, someone who wrote me an email concerning the article I wrote last week was a police officer. And this female police officer, and she said, the one thing that bothers me, notwithstanding, you know, this guy, she said, is that they continue to identify him as former police sergeant. And she said, that's such an affront to everybody who has ever carried a badge. And, you know, when I wrote her back and I said, you know, we've got a case in Tracy, California, where a woman killed a child, allegedly killed a child that's not her own, and we continue to identify her as a former Sunday school teacher. We identify other people, you know, the wife of a pastor who shotgunned him to death and then went to jail for it. We identify her victim husband, pastor, and she is the wife of a pastor. I said, there's something interesting in society where positions that have trust, that have responsibility, whether you're a preacher or a Sunday school teacher or a school teacher or a police officer, we hold those people to a higher standard. And when they fail to meet that standard, number one, I think it's of interest to all of us. And number two, we want to know why the system failed us and why that person failed us. And I think right now, Drew Peterson is the biggest example of someone in the system who we trusted, who we gave authority to, who a lot of people right now feel this guy failed us and took advantage of us and broke our trust for a number of years. And I think that's part of the challenge in this whole case.
Well said, and it's far from over. I'm sure you and I will talk a lot more about Drew Peterson in the weeks and months to come. Thanks, Clint.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That's Clint Van Zandt, a retired FBI agent, profiler, author, and you can check out his articles at newsvine.com. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Nothing But the Sax segment. You know Robin Sax as a author, ADA out of Los Angeles County, television analyst, you name it, she's here, and we're going to talk Drew Peterson. Hi, Robin.
Hey, Dana. How are you tonight?
Not too bad. When you see, as a DA, you're accused, arrested, and making the walk from the paddy wagon to the jail, and he's talking to the press and saying his spiffy outfit and his bling and three squares a day and all that sort of stuff, you must be sitting back as a DA just smiling.
Everything about him being arrested makes me smile. It's, you know, the indictment that we've been waiting for, and the smirk that seems to follow him everywhere, followed him right to the paddy wagon, and I just smirked right back at him.
You know, Joel Brodsky, who was just on just before you, was on the show, I don't know however long this has been going on now, a year and a half ago, whatever, Drew was on too at the same time. And Joel said that he's going to, because I talked about why are you doing so much media, and his question was, is it's a strategy, like OJ. He's going to use the media as much as he can, that he was actually trying real hard to rein in Drew, that Drew could be a lot worse than what we actually see, you know, making faces at the camera and running around and all that kind of stuff. Has the strategy now backfired on him?
Well, and I don't think in OJ there was a strategy to use the media.
No.
That's the big difference. The media found OJ, and the media highlighted some of the issues, and it was, you know, other players that played to the media, much less than the defense. So I think it's always bad. It always, 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 always backfires to use the media. When the media finds somebody, and finds interest and highlights something, the media can be a benefit. In this case, we as a society were able to see the downfall of the O.J. Simpson case, and we were able to see other downfalls in history because the media was there. But if you looked at another Peterson, Scott Peterson, he, quote, used the media too, and look how well that did for him.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if Scott got as much media as Drew Peterson, but regardless, it doesn't matter. Let's look at the case itself. Kathleen Savio's family must be elated. Justice should be served for all families, victims' families in cases like this. But here we have a case, and there's never a perfect case. You know that. I know that. There are forensics involved, although a quote-unquote botched first autopsy, allegedly. A second autopsy, it was supposed to be an accidental drowning, then it wasn't an exhumation, all these sorts of things. But I think a big part of this case will be her letters, her notes, her, if something happens to me, look at Drew, your thoughts.
Well, it doesn't get better than that, frankly. I mean, that's the good stuff. How often, and you know, Dana, in your law enforcement history, do you actually get a victim who writes a worst-case scenario letter in journals and has really the motive, the history, the abuse, and everything that can help explain the crime behind it? Many times we have to put pieces of puzzles together and relying on statements that were made to other family members, to friends, and so forth. Here you have Kathleen Chavo in her own writing saying her, you know, preparing for what may be her demise, and not that that's not telling enough, but then you have the disappearance of a fourth wife. The sheer number of wives alone certainly raises an eyebrow, and then you couple that with his smirky behavior and his jokes about spiffy outfits and bling. Like, this is a freaking joke. And so with all of the stuff beside, before you even get into any hard evidence like forensics and inconsistent statements made to the police over time and any crime scene evidence and so forth, I mean, you have a lot of juice for a story here.
Yeah, Drew needs to be muzzled, that's for sure. He's certainly not doing anything good for himself. But again, when you look at the case, you know, as many years as it's been, the defense strategy, and by no means do I know it, but I think it's going to be fairly easy to figure out that, you know, this was just an accident. It was actually deemed to be an accident. And if it wasn't for, and this is just me speculating, please don't get angry with me, if it wasn't for all the media coverage and the vilification of my client, this would have never been looked at again. But then on the other hand, thank God that it was looked at again, that there was an exhumation and there was a second autopsy. It's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. Where do you think that will go?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that would be the defense strategy as we see it, as we sit here today.
Right.
But I don't know that I'm going to put these prosecutors, I'm not going to hold them to being stupid here. I think that they have a far greater plan, and that is, one is, let's let him run his mouth a bit. Let's see what the defense does. It was kind of time. We've all been waiting to see if something happens, and we're kind of at that, you know, as society sits here and waits, we've kind of been having that uh-oh feeling, you know, is he ever going to be charged? Is there other potential victims and everything? And, you know, I don't know that he's going to be able to use that defense should they turn around and in short order, after he gets solid in that defense, then charge him with Stacey Peterson.
Yeah, and that's a possibility too. And again, Joel Brodsky was on just before you, and he said one of his strategies will be, or when I asked him a very point blank question, saying, "Are you ready?" He says he has his forensic people lined up, and he has all his ducks in a row, and the forensics, as far as the autopsy results and what actually happened or what didn't happen, may or may not be a huge part of it, but I think the state has a pretty good case. But why so long for the indictment? And I know you and I have talked about indicting a ham sandwich, but this went almost to the deadline. And to be quite honest with you, many people that are part of this that I've interviewed and I'm in contact with didn't know if it was even going to happen.
That's true, and that's why we're sitting here on bated breath, and I was so excited to see it happen. I think that that the length of time was a strategy on the part of the prosecution, partly, but also I think that there was a dual strategy going on. One was to make sure that there was really, you know, all the evidence that was going to be available to really deal with what was going to be the, you know, a second autopsy and the botched forensics and all that other stuff to kind of overcome that and be one step ahead of the defense and be able to really look at it, because this isn't a fresh case. So going through it, knowing that bit of reasonable doubt could already exist, the prosecution really wanted to make sure that they were going to meet their burden. That's number one. But I think number two, the real reason was, let's see if we get, if we're able to locate Stacey Peterson. And I have to say her body, unfortunately, because I think we all pretty much are in mutual agreement here, that the likelihood of her being found alive is like, you know, negative 0% chance.
Right.
And so I think that the goal was twofold. One was to see if we could find her body, see if we can string together multiple murder charges. And also, the more that Drew Peterson was out there, the more he ran his mouth, the more statements that could be used later on. And he just couldn't help himself to keep talking, and he did all the way to jail. And he will at every other available moment.
Robin Sachs is here. Let's talk about Drew Peterson and his quote-unquote big mouth. Many in the media were vilified, including yours truly, although I never suggested that he have a contest on my program to win a date with him or anything as far as giving him airtime. But I think a lot of that airtime could be used against him because he made a few slips in the media. Is that possible? Or are we going to have a reel of Drew Peterson, kind of like you or I would have if we were promoting ourselves as commentators, are real, because a lot of Drew's reel might just end up in court.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this is actually this year in crime we could call the reel of the century. I mean, we have a Casey Anthony reel going on right now too, and Nancy Grace does a nice job of editing it down so you can get a string of statements put together right out of Casey's mouth. And those statements are absolutely admissible in court. They are hearsay, technically, meaning that they are out-of-court statements that could be or would be used in court to prove the truth of the matter asserted, as we know. But if Drew Peterson gets on the stand at all, each statement that he makes that's inconsistent with some other statement that he's ever made will come in, and that will, I mean, talk about a comedy and a reality show. I mean, forget the TV's Cat House as being the next stop for Drew Peterson. It's going to be the, you know, the cat courthouse for him, where we're going to be able to see him and see the prosecutor shove his words right down his throat.
So those that say that the media just enabled this guy, maybe in the long run the media has enabled this guy to spend a lengthy time in prison. I don't know. We'll have to see. Robin Sachs is here with their weekly Nothing But the Sacks segment. And we're focused.
And then let me just say also one other thing. I mean, I don't know if you recall in the Phil Spector case. Mm-hmm. I mean, Phil Spector also made that comment of, you know, the Hitler-like henchman, when he was referring to the DA's office, and the DA's office went through great lengths of, you know, should we use this statement or should we not use this statement? Because it is a statement that can be used, and it's a strategic decision like anything else, just so I threw that out there.
Well, no, and you're entirely right, and it should be interesting to see. Now when we have this case, and we have the Anthony case, and we have the potential for changes of venue, and that whole argument, and the nonstop media coverage, it's only just begun with Drew Peterson. It's only just begun, believe it or not, with Casey Anthony, because it's going to get wider and bigger and have worldwide coverage. But when you look at both cases, Drew Peterson, although a Bolingbrook police sergeant, disgraced Bolingbrook police sergeant, Casey Anthony, just a young mixed-up kid who was more interested in peeing on the parking lot than trying to raise her child, and both are in jail. They're really, neither one of them were high-profile people, a la O.J. Simpson, Robert Blake, Phil Spector. But why did the public grab on to both of these stories? Is it because of the 24-hour news coverage, or is it because of the circumstances involved? You know, you got a cop, you've got a beautiful young girl, and Kaylee Anthony. Why, Robin?
You know, that's a question that I am very fascinated with myself. As you know, on Justice Interrupted Radio, as well as on your show, we are the rare exception of people who cover cases that are not in the media. And you and I both know, we get calls, we get emails, we reach out to victims all over the place, and there are hundreds, literally hundreds of cases that break every day in the news all around the country where there are very disgusting, despicable human beings who've done heinous things that should be outlined, that crimes that haven't been solved, law enforcement who have botched cases, law enforcement who've committed cases, you know, law enforcement who have done amazing jobs. There are all kinds of cases that are worthy of attention, and they should be highlighted more. It's one of my biggest gripe with the media right now is that it's not really reflective of all the crimes and all the stuff that happens every day, because the benefit to me in terms of the media is what, A, we can, victims and law enforcement and DAs and good folks can use the media to help put pressure and to make the right result happen in the case. And when the airways are clogged with Drew Peterson and Casey Anthony, it makes for little room for other cases. That's number one. And then the other problem that I have is that then that becomes the, you know, vision, and whatever happens in that case becomes the standard by which the jury, the voting public out there, sees what's involved in a case. And as you and I have said before, Casey Anthony has got more evidence than, yeah, you know, 95% of the cases that get prosecuted and convicted in all over the country and your country all the time, and should not be looked at as a barometer for what the amount of evidence is, because it's just simply not that much that exists in other cases, and still rightful, righteous convictions are had. So why is it, is the question that you're really asking, and I think that there is the fascination with the mom, the beautiful, or the, you know, presentable or seemingly beautiful mom, you know, who has no connection to her 2.5 beautiful baby, who has, you know, not a morsel of, you know, empathy or love in which she decides to end that child's life. And you've got the fascination with the grandparents and Cindy being her own sideshow. And then Drew Peterson, all, you know, again, it's a cop, but he also puts on his own sideshow, and it makes for good TV. But I, you know, challenge, frankly, every mainstream media outlet to put the other stuff on out there, because those cases really are the cases that happen every day. And this stuff is important, too. I think that there's lessons to be learned in all cases, but darn it, there are other victims that need a platform and need a place, and there are other law enforcement agencies that should be doing their jobs, and there's so many good people out there who watch these news channels who can help and be of assistance to solving a crime. I mean, Drew Peterson is solved. Casey Anthony is solved, as far as I'm concerned. Let's move on.
You know, and one last question for you. Robin Sachs is here, and we're talking Drew Peterson. The Anthony case, I've covered these sorts of cases for many, many years now, and not only cover them on the radio, but, you know, been involved in them in my own line of work. But I've never seen discovery the way that it has been, and I understand the Florida law with the Anthony case. Will we see something similar with Drew Peterson? Because there's probably a lot that we just don't know.
I'm sure that there is a lot that we don't know. Florida happens to be a state in which the rules and laws in terms of public access to information are very, very much in favor and very liberal in terms of the public being able to know what's going on. So there's literally a release of law enforcement information that gets released from the jail or from the law, from the sheriff's department, as well as the courthouse, every day in the Anthony case. Chicago or Illinois, which is, you know, not one of our let's say tighter law-abiding states, I would be surprised that their laws are as liberal. I mean, I assume that the state of Illinois is probably closer to California, where there are more privacy issues and not as much access to information, and I think we can see that by the way that the indictment was held, you know, was given, and the way we are finding about information in this case. We have ideas, we have, you know, a lot of information from Drew Peterson himself, but in terms of the release of actual reports, we're not seeing that from the courthouse.
Yeah, it should be interesting. This story is far from over. Robin Sachs, thank you. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County. We're going to take a break, and we're going to continue on with our coverage on Drew Peterson, and we'll have former DA victims' rights advocate, author, and a fairly calm and reserved Wendy Murphy here on Scared Bucky's Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're going to continue on with our coverage on the arrest of Drew Peterson. My next guest has an article about Drew Peterson at dailybeast.com. And is that Deja Vu? I can't say that. Or what? When you talk about a Daily Beast and Drew Peterson, I think the two of them go together. Wendy Murphy is here. You know Wendy is an author and a former DA law professor and a very calm and reserved guest every time she's on the show. Hi, Wendy.
I've been called many things, Dana. And that wouldn't be among them, calm or reserved.
Well, I had Joel Brodsky on the show tonight, Drew Peterson's lawyer. He says he's ready. He's been prepared for some time for this. It doesn't really bother him that his client is being goofy as normal, talking about three squares and spiffy outfits and bling right. And all that sort of stuff. And that's just the way that it goes, according to Mr. Brodsky. Your thoughts on the arrest of Drew Peterson?
That's just the way it goes. Yeah, I mean, there may not be a playbook on how you're supposed to act when you're arrested for murder, but joking about three squares in jail, joking about overdue library book fines when you're getting picked up for murder,
Yeah. Wouldn't
really be on even the last page in a footnote if there were a book on how you're supposed to act when you get picked up for murder. But, you know, look, behavioral evidence, a lot of folks would say, isn't really going to make or break the case, and that's sort of true. When I was a prosecutor, you know, we sometimes used behavioral evidence. Clearly, the stuff that's more objective, scientifically weighty, and so forth, is the forensic stuff and the statements witnesses make. But juries are made up of human beings, and they think about behavior, and they look at people and judge them based on how they act and what they do and don't do. Because jurors are thinking to themselves, well, if that were me, I wouldn't do that unless I were guilty. And therefore, it's a thumb on the scale. For juries, the weird things that people do, in terms of behavior, can amount to an important thumb on the scale that makes all the difference in the world. If you're trying to demonstrate reasonable doubt and you're Joel Brodsky and the jury is saying, well, you know, I might have had a reasonable doubt, but the guy acts like a crazy man, and therefore I think he's guilty because he makes jokes about being charged with murder. You have to take that into account. So Brodsky can't help it but say, well, you know, that's just the kind of guy he is. But we heard that same sort of thing during Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's just the way he is. He's weird. Okay, but you know, the jury is going to look at you and have a certain judgment about your character, and you can't just slough it off like it's nothing. Juries. Are careful to be fair, but they're also human beings. So that's one thing I want to say about Brodsky. The other thing I heard, by the way, is that Brodsky keeps saying publicly, well, Cyril Wecht, I've got a great expert on my side, Dr. Cyril Wecht, who, by the way, I like very much, and he's a buddy of mine.
Yes.
But Cyril Wecht has not exactly enjoyed being used, his name being used, by Brodsky and the defense team in terms of the most recent PR in the aftermath of the arrest, and Cyril Wecht being described as the person who's going to be the expert who says she didn't necessarily die of homicide. Yes, she drowned, but it was very likely an accident and so forth. Cyril Wecht did take a look at the very early autopsy in this case, and let's remember what we're talking about here. Drew Peterson's third wife's death, Kathleen Savio's death, everybody agrees was a result of drowning, but the big debate is whether it was an accident or homicide.
Yep.
And that's often the difference between murder and non-murder. So Cyril Wecht took a look at the old autopsy from way back when they did a pretty crummy job, I might add, doing an autopsy with regard to the circumstances of her death. And Cyril Wecht said, according to Joel Brodsky, I don't see evidence of homicide. That's fine. But Cyril Wecht has not taken a look at the new autopsy. And we all know that the poor victim's body was exhumed after Stacy Peterson died, wife number four, second wife of four to die, and people started raising their eyebrows, as well they should, about what this guy tends to do to his wives. They exhumed her body to say, maybe we got it wrong, and good for them. They did another autopsy. And yes, she died of drowning, but not by accident, by homicide. The manner of death is homicide. Cyril Wecht may ultimately not disagree with that. Maybe he'll agree. So I think Brodsky has to back up a little bit before he starts tossing Cyril Weck's name around as the scientist and the doctor and the expert who's going to help Drew Peterson win his freedom. As far as I know, Cyril Weck is not on board with any of that because, primarily, he hasn't seen the new autopsy. In fact, none of us have. The only other thing I would say, Dana, is that an awful lot of people are, in the same way that we were happy about O.J. going to prison for anything, we wouldn't have cared if it was for spitting on the sidewalk. We were so angry, not only that he got away with double murder, but that he was so arrogant about it. Mm-hmm. And when people flaunt their acquittals, we just hunt them down. Over the rest of their lives, we're hunting them down until they do something wrong, and then we pounce. Because it just doesn't feel like justice until there's something that happens. We kind of feel like that about Drew Peterson. He didn't just not get arrested for the disappearance and death of one woman, disappearance of two women, and probable death of two, and he just happened to be married to them, and that's bad enough. He then, makes a mockery of all of us and thumbs his nose at us because he is a cop. He knows how to get away with murder better than the rest of us. And is that what he's doing? Is that why he's on TV joking and taking, fake videos of the camera people that are watching him at his house? Is that why he's, potentially signing up to be on some goofy reality TV show, trying to find a new girlfriend to help him take care of the kids that have lost their mothers? Two different sets of children lost their mothers, in my opinion, because of him. And now he's looking for a fifth wife. Almost like he's on the dating game. The fact is, his personality, his arrogance, his thumb your nose at the entire world, not just the legal system, everyone, all the human beings who are not connected to the legal system, people like you and me, who look at this guy and want to wring his neck, he's thumbing his nose at everybody saying, na-na-na-na-na, see if you can catch me. And so, of course, when the arrest came, we were all gleeful. The bottom line remains, however, he's entitled to the presumption of innocence. I don't think it's a rock-solid case. I think the defense does have something to work with. But for the most part, people are gleeful that not only will he face trial in at least Kathleen Savio's case, we may well hear a lot of the evidence that relates to Stacey Peterson's disappearance, because when you are engaged in a pattern of behavior, when you show a course of conduct, that's what we call it in law, when you have a common scheme of behavior, the law opens a big door and says, we're going to let it all in. We think people who engage in this kind of behavior over and over and over again, even if it's only a couple times, but these are big old things he's doing more than once, when you engage in nefarious behavior in a way that looks like a pattern, even if it's only a short pattern, the law lets the stuff all come in so we can shine a light on the way this guy does his deeds, the MO, if you will. And I'm hopeful that the judge in the case that he's now under indictment for, that the judge will say, even though we don't know anything about Stacey Peterson in terms of where she is, we don't have a body, we don't know exactly what happened, his behavior was suspicious enough in a way that's similar enough to how he related to Kathleen Savio. We're gonna let it all in and let the jury figure out what to make of, in a sense, his pattern of behavior with his wives.
Both cases will tie into each other. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Wendy, when Joel Brodsky and actually Drew Peterson were on my program very early on, and I was asking Joel Brodsky about muzzling his client, they both laughed, and Brodsky very seriously said that it was a strategy. Like O.J., although O.J. didn't go to the media went to O.J., and now, you and I in the media, we have what we call a reel, bits and clips of shows we've been on and all that sort of stuff. I think Drew Peterson's reel, including some of the appearances on my show, may not get him a starring bill somewhere except in the federal penitentiary system. Your thoughts?
Well, it's funny. Most of the time, a good defense attorney will say to his client, guilty or not, shut up, because nothing good can come of you opening your mouth. Now, the big old fat exception to that is, if you are guilty of sin
and you need to try to manipulate public opinion, if you're guilty and you need to try to generate some support for your side, and you happen to be handsome or popular or famous, so you're Scott Peterson or you're Michael Jackson, Kobe Bryant, if you've got something nice going on about you that maybe somebody in the public might latch onto, then notwithstanding the fact that almost everything you say will probably hurt you, there's a good chance your lawyer will let you speak. Now, no lawyer will admit it because it's almost per se malpractice. As a defense attorney, if you encourage or allow your client to speak publicly, it's not only unethical, it's potentially malpractice. So no lawyer will admit it. But it was not an accident that Drew Peterson had his mug all over the cameras early on. It was not an accident that Scott Peterson was doing his fake crying with Diane Sawyer early on in his case. That was planned. It's part of the strategy. And we have to be careful as consumers of news. We have to be careful not to be sucked in. We have to be suspicious consumers of information when the accused intentionally puts his face into the public trough, because there's a 99.9% chance they're doing that to try to manipulate us, and we have to resist that attempt. Now, all that said, Drew Peterson may well be a very odd animal in the sense that because he was a cop, not just a cop, but a high-ranking cop, he felt a degree of arrogance beyond whatever his lawyers were saying. And he felt like he could make statements and go on television and say things and, you know, it would feed his ego, and he didn't care if it might ultimately hurt his case because he was planning that there would never be a case. And he was that arrogant because he probably feels that confident about his skills as a cop to hide the body and avoid detection and, you know, hide whatever evidence might actually ultimately prove his guilt. He felt so smart that he could afford to be a little bit smug. I don't know. What I do know, Dana, is that, and you know, this is a cautionary tale, although I hate to call it that because anyone who hears me say this, you know, may well end up using it to their advantage as a criminal, and I don't want that to happen. But, you know, the message, if I were to write a memo to all bad guys, all criminals out there, the memo is, it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what you are anticipating might happen in terms of the evidence mounting sufficiently, or, you know, there ever being a case against you, or whether you think you're smart enough to say things publicly that can only help you, not hurt you. Let me be clear. You can only hurt yourself. If you are a bad guy, if you're a criminal, if you're a suspect, you speak publicly, it will be used against you. And everything Drew Peterson has ever said or done is potentially not only usable against him, but usable in ways that he may not have been anticipating. In other words, he might have thought to himself, well, you know, early on I was joking because I was thinking to myself, oh, I'll never get in trouble for this. Well, if a jury sees that and decides that's an inconsistent behavior pattern, we think someone whose wife is missing, shouldn't make jokes, and therefore we think he's guilty. He can't control at this point how the jurors might interpret what he has said and what he has done by putting himself out there in the public airways. So I'm personally thrilled that he's been so arrogant and such a big mouth and put himself out there and been on Larry King. I am personally thrilled as an evidentiary matter that he put his own child on Larry King. I'm talking about Kathleen Savio's own son, who is, I'm sure, desperately sad that his mother is dead.
Yeah.
He didn't care. He put that child on Larry King and propped the kid up for his benefit so that the child said on an international world stage, I don't think my dad killed my mother. He, you know, whatever the other reasons were the child gave. On the one hand, it galls me that any human being would use a child like that. It's just unconscionable, beyond unconscionable. On the other hand, when the jurors see that tape, they are going to hate him extra.
Yep.
That's a thumb on the scale against him because people care about kids. And no matter what that child knew or didn't know, you don't use your child as a tool in your own defense. That's the devil himself walking around. When you use a kid like that, that's pure evil. And a jury's going to know that only evil people use their children like that. And guess what? Evil people kill. That's that's his problem. Nothing he's done publicly is going to work to his advantage. It's all bad, all of it, every bit of it, and he can't control how the jurors interpret his behavior and the things he has said. So, you know, it's all a big gamble for him, and I think it was a bad gamble, and I think he's going to be convicted.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Wendy, thank you.
My pleasure, Dana. Talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, and her article about Drew Peterson can be found, I just think it's comical, at thedailybeast.com. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. And remember, the creme de la creme, I can't say that tonight, creme de la creme for blogs is scaredmonkeys.com. We'll see you again next week. Thank you. Good night.
You've been listening to The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.